added it to his running total. This was the fourth time he'd been put into an air car, tube, transit, and elevator. Keeping him blind and deaf would hide most everything of value he could learn about his surroundings, but at least he could gauge time and distance with his count. Naturally, he assumed the guards were walking him in circles a few times to defeat such a tactic, but Roland felt the need to do something constructive. A rough hand gripped him by the elbow and pulled him up slightly. He stood, the heavy shackles around his hands and ankles limiting him to a shuffle as the second guard took him by the arm and led him forward. Roland felt a slight breeze tug at the hood and moist air caress his bare hands. A few minutes and several direction changes later, the guards jerked him to a stop. His hood came off, and Roland blinked hard as his eyes adjusted to harsh lights.
"Wait outside,"
a man said. There was a snap of a closing door, and the lights dimmed. Before Roland was a man in his mid-40s, bald but for a ring of hair over his ears and around the back of his head. He wore an army uniform, the ribbons and design the same as the Terran army, but the badges were different and a gold braid ran from his left shoulder to beneath his armpit. He had 5 stars on his shoulder, a rank not used by Earth since the end of the Ember War. Marshal.
"I will show you trust and respect,"
the Marshal said.
"You will keep that trust and respect so long as you return the courtesy. Understand?"
Roland tried to work his jaw, but the muzzle tightened in response. He nodded. The Marshal waved a hand over the gauntlet screen on his left arm, and the muzzle and restraints fell to the floor. Roland rubbed his jaw and looked around. They were in a small antechamber with marble floors and lacquered walls. A simple wooden door was behind the Marshal. The Abaran officer turned around, and Roland saw a pistol strapped to his thigh. The man handed Roland a long coat from where it hung over a leather and chrome stool.
"I am Davust. You'll appreciate this later,"
the Marshal said.
"What do you want with me?"
Roland took the coat but didn't move to put it on.
"It's not me that wants you. Do us all a favor and don't play games with her," Davust said. "If you think I'm gonna help you, be a pawn in your war with Earth, you should have kept me blind, deaf, and dumb. Less trouble."
Roland handed the coat back to Davust. The Marshal glanced down at the proffered coat, shook his head slightly, then touched his palm to the doorknob and the door swung open. Davust motioned for Roland to follow him. Inside was a circular room, the ceiling 4 stories tall and domed. Shelves made up the lower levels of the walls, discordant colored spines of books and journals belying the organization of the room. The upper walls were computer banks, humming and emitting cold mist from their cooling systems. In the center of the room was a wide holotank. A network of golden lattices enclosed the only other person in the room, a shadow inside the holotank, arms moving about like a conductor leading a symphony. When the door shut behind Roland, he noticed a pair of large and armored legionnaires holding Gauss carbines standing on either side of the doorway. Roland had some confidence he could wrest the pistol away from the Marshal, but trying to overpower the 2 legionnaires was a losing proposition, as long as he was out of his armor.
"He talks too much, doesn't he?"
came from inside the holotank. Roland recognized the voice from the Ka'Resh artifact on Oricon where he'd been captured, Stacy Ibarra. The golden lattice degraded, revealing more and more of the person inside. She was silver, just like Mark Ibarra, her hair frozen in place in a shortcut that extended halfway down her neck. Her body was a simple jumpsuit, detailed but the same color as the rest of her body. The golden lattice collapsed into a glowing flake, then lowered into the side of the holotank. She made her way down the curved stairs of the dais, her feet beating against the stairs with a metal-on-metal ding. Roland's breath fogged as she drew closer, and a chill wrapped around his body. He gripped the coat in his hands tightly, feeling foolish for not heeding the Marshal's counsel.
"Look at you," Stacy said. "Always a surprise to see the heart of an armor soldier in person. Only human inside those amazing suits."
She stopped a few feet away, her doll-like face betraying no emotion, but Roland could feel the soul behind her blank eyes.
"I didn't think you'd be so young. I expected a few years on you at least," Your other armor friend didn't put up much of a fight against Nicodemus. You at least gave him some sport, she said.
What happened to Agnar, to the rest of my lance?
Roland asked, shivering.
They all left the Kaaresh station before I had Orokon's atmosphere crush it into dust. The Kaaresh built things to last, but they didn't build them that tough.
Why spare them? We're at war, and I am not at war with Earth!
She jabbed a finger at Roland's chest, then bent her finger back into a fist and lowered her arm.
They are at war with me.
I saw what you did to the Cairo. Raw footage doesn't lie, Roland said. You ambushed that ship and murdered a crew, then dumped it into an ocean world, hoping we'd never find the evidence.
Oh, that, she said, tossing a hand next to her head. Did your masters tell you that the ship, the Lady Gulf, was part of a squadron attacked by Earth?
An unprovoked attack, I might add. And that the Lady Gulf was the only survivor.
That it fled to the system where the Cairo was hunting for it.
Earth started this fight. The Lady had vital information to bring me, that she repaid a blood debt on her way home with something of a bonus. So you're the victim here.
The side of Roland's mouth pulled into a brief sneer as stiffness crept into his fingers and toes and pain needled along the edges of his ears.
Earth could have left us well enough alone. We have mutual problems.
Stacy backed up and turned to a holoscreen along the walls. Marshal Davos nudged Roland's arm. Roland scowled and put the coat on. The fabric heated up and pushed the chill away. Stacy put her palm up to the holoscreen, and pictures flowed across the projection so fast they were almost a blur.
We worried you wouldn't be of much use to us, she said. But then the colonists on Orokon simply would not stop talking about a team of armor that rescued children from the Kasat.
Then the wheels began turning.
The holoscreen stopped on a picture of a sword, longer than Roland was tall. Templar crosses built into the hilt and pommel. Text boxes popped up along the blade's edge. Roland recognized it immediately as the sword given to him by Ibaran legionnaires, one that originally belonged to an armor soldier named Morrigan. Stacy's bodyguard, Nicodemus, had taken it after crushing Roland in a fight on the Kaaresh station. Stacy touched one of the text boxes, and a double helix of DNA appeared on the screen.
Plenty of blood on your sword, she said,
and this one here is different from any we've seen before. You came across the leadership cast of the Kasat, didn't you?
The ones called Ixio?
I'm not gonna help you.
Roland straightened up.
You and your pack of traitors have done enough damage to Earth. You goaded us into a fight with the Kasat, and...
Stacy raced toward Roland and grabbed him by the front of his coat, hefting him off the ground with ease and shaking him.
You think they'll stop with us?
She screamed.
Do you know what they've done?
The cold from her fist stung through the fabric and made Roland's breathing painful.
My lady, Davoust said.
Stacy dropped Roland to his feet and gave him a not-so-gentle push backwards, but the marshal stopped Roland from losing his footing. Stacy's still features stared at Roland and he could feel hatred burning inside her.
You know what happened to the colony on New Caledonia? She asked.
Where?
Roland rubbed his chest, kneading warmth back into his flesh. Stacy reached back to the holoscreen, and her fingers tapped out a code in the air. The dais changed, and the large field came to life and showed a burnt-out village, the streets littered with dead men, women, and children.
Little over a year ago, Marshal Davoust said. Phase One colony from Earth in the Orion Arm along the edge of Crucible Space. A resupply convoy found it like this. 863 dead, 209 missing. No, never heard of this,
Roland said.
Of course not.
Stacy walked into the holotank and knelt next to a dead woman clutching a bundle in her arms. She ran her hand along the woman's head, then set her other hand on the bundle.
It was just before the second Terra Nova expedition. President Garrett couldn't have his good news story preempted by a story about human beings murdered in cold blood. Typical of him.
She stood and traced a circle with a fingertip. The holo sped ahead and stopped next to a partially collapsed building. In the rubble were black plates of armor, their edges stained with gray goo.
Officially,
she said. The attack remains under investigation, with no clue as to the identity of the attackers.
But you know now, don't you, Roland?
At Raka Armor. They're the Kasat's foot soldiers. They decompose rapidly after they're killed, and Earth should have figured that out by now,
the Marshal said.
Why would they attack us that long ago?
Roland stepped away from Davust.
Did you all kick that hornet's nest and lead them to the colony?
We encountered them only a few months ago, Stacy said, and they were just as hostile.
Willing to talk now? Roland hesitated. He'd fought the Kasat, seen their fleet in action, and recognized them as a potent enemy on par with the Vishrakoth and Kror. If the Ybarans had information that Earth could use...
Only if you'll send me back, Roland said. Send me back to Earth with everything you know about the Kasat, every bit of information. Promise that, and I'll tell you what I know about the Ixio.
Hardly a bargain for us. Stacy came down from the dais and extinguished the holo with a metallic snap of her fingers. We'd get that information eventually.
Not without risk to our agents on Earth, Davust said.
But is he worth keeping?
She asked the Marshal.
Détente, Behardugue. Lura Gergi, Beharda. Armadura Habestik, Ez Izate Zer Behardugu,
Davust said.
English, please,
Roland said.
I accept your terms, Stacy said. Tell me about the Ixio and we'll return you to Earth with everything we know. Their tactics, fleets we've encountered.
She extended a hand to him. Roland grit his teeth and shook her hand. It was like pressing his hand to a glacier. His flesh flared with pain before going numb. He pulled back and gripped his stiff fingers.
Their homeworld,
Roland said.
See?
Stacy said, wagging a finger at him.
That's a good question. We don't know where it is. The Kasat were never part of the old alliance. How a new race managed to access the Crucible Network is something of a mystery. There, I just gave you something. Now tell me about the Ixio.
Roland took a deep breath and wondered just how big of a mistake he was about to make. He told them how he and Shareel first learned of the third Kasat species during a hasty autopsy of a Sanheel, then about encountering one of the tall biomechanical aliens named Tomenikai aboard their battleship.
It wanted the children,
Roland said.
Human children. Said they were important for whatever kind of unity the Kasat provide with their skull implants. The children weren't aberrant like the adults who he said were false minds in weed bodies. Then I...
Stop,
Stacy said, giving Davust a quick glance.
He said those words? False minds in weed bodies. Exactly?
That's right. Then he went off about how we must be redeemed for our crimes or we must be purged. Then I cut his head off and crushed his skull.
Roland shrugged slightly.
It fits the theory, Davust said. The shield tech, the cloaks.
Stacy half raised her arms, then let them fall to her sides. She turned to the holotank, then back to the Marshal. Pressing her hands over her face, she then drummed her fingertips against her metal body, making high-pitched tings like the toll of small bells.
No, this isn't my fault.
Stacy looked around as if she didn't know where she was. Roland stiffened, his instincts sensing a threat.
We didn't have a choice!
Stacy screamed, the words echoing around the room and the force of her words stinging Roland's ears.
I had to do it! We kept it from the rest because we knew they'd try and stop us! But when it was over, Valdar... Valdar blamed me! Me!
She grabbed Roland by the back of the neck and jaw. He grunted in pain and tried to pull away, but her grip was like his armor's.
Ken didn't judge me!
She shook her head from side to side as Roland beat at her arms.
Ken understood! Is he gone? Did he stay for me like I asked?
Roland tasted ice in his mouth as his spit froze.
Garch!
Davus grabbed Stacy by the forearms and tried to pull her off Roland. A power-armored guard lifted her hand off Roland's neck and yanked Roland back, tossing him against the wall. Roland touched his ice-cold jaw and watched as the two guards pinned Stacy's arms and legs and held her against the floor. She wailed, a cry caught somewhere between grief and madness. She pulled an arm free and struck one of the guards in the chest, blasting him back and sliding across the floor.
"I had no choice!"
Stacy struck at the other guard, who caught her by the wrist, the power armor's servos and pseudo-muscles straining against her raw power. Davoust grabbed Roland by the back of his jacket and dragged him out of the room. The door closed, and Roland heard Stacy screaming, followed by the crash of metal being bludgeoned into scrap. Roland lay on the floor, staring at the vaulted ceilings as pain pulsed through his face and neck. The marshal knelt near Roland, keeping a hand to the soldier's chest.
"Are you hurt? Badly?"
Davoust asked. Roland tried to open his mouth, but it was locked in place. He managed a pitiful grunt. Davoust looked at the flesh on his palms, stained white with frostbite.
"She has her moments," Davoust said. "When they tell Earth about this, no, it doesn't matter to us. She is our lady. She loves us. She will save us, and we will die for her."
Stacy sat against a broken computer bank, sparks falling against her skin, leaving tiny black smudges that faded away seconds later. She stared at the dais in the middle of the room, her unblinking eyes locked on the flickering holotank. Hunks of broken machinery were strewn across the floor like the aftermath of a hurricane. Her two guards huddled against the door, blocking it with their bodies. One was on a knee, a broken arm clutched against his side. The other stood up, his helm broken and blood dripping from a broken nose.
"Hamish, Tyrell, I'm sorry," Stacy said.
"Are you well, my lady?"
asked the one with the broken nose.
"I am now. Would you take Hamish to the infirmary? I need a minute."
She got to her feet and brushed herself off.
"We cannot leave you," Hamish said.
"I shouldn't have made you so well."
She went to Hamish and reached out to touch him, then pulled their hand back.
"Look what I've done to you both. Just go.
Leave."
"We cannot."
"Then summon the doctor."
Stacy stamped a foot against the ground, cracking the marble. Tyrell nodded and touched the screen on his forearm. Stacy walked slowly to the dais. She ran her fingertips along the edge and tapped out a code against the side. There was a hiss of hydraulics, and the dais rose out of the ground. A clear cylinder came up, its contents hidden momentarily by steam that faded away. Inside, a young woman was frozen in stasis, her chest covered in blood from a bullet wound. Blood stained a hand reaching for help, spilled down the sides of her mouth, and hung frozen in time within the chamber. Stacy, her mind and soul trapped inside the metal shell, looked at her true body, her mortally wounded flesh and blood.
"Should I go back?"
she asked her guards.
"Go back for that last moment of true life?"
"We need you,"
Hamish said.
"We're lost without you,"
Tyrell added.
"I fought the monsters," she said.
"I stared into the abyss, and this is what I've become."
She ran her fingers down the seam of the stasis pod, and it sank back into the floor.
"Why do I do it?"
she asked.
"Every soul cries out to live,"
Hamish said, wiping blood off his lip.
"You will save us. You will save all of us."
"Just like you did during the Ember War,"
Tyrell added.
"There are dark days ahead of us," Stacy said. "But who better than an Ibarra to bear the torch?"
Chapter 6. Sitting on his bunk, Roland rubbed his aching jaw and poked at a plate of rubbery potatoes. He looked up at Mark Ibarra through the cell bars and shrugged.
"A pair of medics looked me over. Then I got the hood and muzzle, and they brought me back here," Roland said. "This is worse than I thought," Ibarra said. "But things are beginning to make sense now."
"Really?"
"I got the impression that she's had meltdowns like that before.
Roland mashed his fork into a potato and took a bite. The pain of chewing spoiled his meal.
Not that. The toff, you nitwit.
Ibarra shook his head.
We thought they were extinct, but some of them must have been away from their homeworld and had a ship with a Kar-Resh jump engine. The Overlord must have...
He paced across his cell, one hand on his hip, the other tapping against his lips in thought.
They must have feared we'd hunt them all down, Ibarra said. This was before the Zaros were defeated. They jumped to a system beyond the Crucible Network, in Alliance space where the Zaros hadn't made it to. Then they must have gone to the Kasat system, and... It fits!
What fits?
Fits that the Toth would masquerade as divine beings to a less advanced culture. They've used the glamour of high technology to enthrall others. How did I miss this?
Roland waited as Ibarra kept pacing, occasionally raising a hand mid-revelation, then dropping it again to continue wearing a rut into the floor.
Why would the Toth be afraid of us killing them off?
Roland asked.
Wasn't it the Zaros? They were the ones bent on xenocide across the whole galaxy.
Ibarra stopped, then clasped his hands behind his back.
It wasn't the Zaros that annihilated the Toth homeworld, it was us, Ibarra said. Do you know what the Zaros masters were? Energy beings. Nigh immortal, with an infinite supply of drones and technology that we still don't fully understand. By the end, they destroyed Bastion and the Alliance. There were drone armadas several trillion strong closing in on Earth before we launched the final attack on the Keyhole Gate and the Zaros' Dyson Sphere. Things were desperate, you understand?
I know about the last battle, Roland said. What I don't understand is what any of this has to do with the Toth. We killed off the Toth? I don't believe it.
What you believe is irrelevant.
Ibarra's surface shimmered.
We had one real weapon at the end of the war, a Kar-Resh named Malal, the last Kar-Resh in the galaxy. He was left behind and imprisoned after the rest of his kind ascended, shall we say. Malal was willing to help us fight the Zaros, but he had a price. And when you make a deal with the devil, you end up losing your soul. So, Stacy and I agreed to Malal's terms once the Zaros were gone, and the Toth paid the price.
Roland set his fork down, his appetite gone. He looked at Ibarra, a man he knew had traded billions of human lives so that a few, Roland included, might survive and reconquer Earth. What Ibarra told him made a certain horrific sense.
What did you do to the Toth?
Roland asked.
Malal wanted to follow the rest of his kind into paradise, some other dimension where death was impossible.
Ibarra spoke quickly.
To do that, he needed the gate, which the Kar-Resh had, and he needed the strength to open it. Malal fed off the minds of sentient beings, their souls, and the number of souls he needed was in the billions. That's why the Breitenfeld vanished right after the last battle with the Zaros,
Roland said.
Smart lad. Stacy and I commandeered the Breitenfeld and jumped to the Toth homeworld, and we let Malal loose. The Toth were in the middle of a civil war after I helped assassinate their last tyrant. All their fleets had been called back to the homeworld. Their one colony on Nibiru had been destroyed during the infighting. You should have seen it. A white pulse of light spreading across the planet, devouring every Toth in existence.
Well, almost every Toth.
This was after the Zaros masters were dead,
Roland said.
Why? Why keep your deal with this Malal? It was genocide.
The masters were dead, but the drones were still out there. Drones with programming and reproduction protocols, good enough to wipe out most of the galaxy without a master directing them. Just because the masters were gone didn't mean we were safe. But Malal had the means to get rid of the drones, change their programming, and make them fly into the nearest star. He wasn't going to trust that we'd deliver the power he needed. Again, you deal with the devil. And then the devil won? Malal went to that paradise of his? Did you wave goodbye or try to go with him?
Ibar stopped and looked away from Roland.
We took Malal to the Dimension Gate after we dealt with the Toth, Ibar said quietly. The Ka'Resh had the door ready for him. He used his power to open it, and, well, the Ka'Resh put some fine print into the devil's contract, because they gave him a door, all right, but it wasn't where the Ka'Resh exist, but to some nightmare. Whatever lived in there tore Malal to pieces and devoured him. The screams were impressive. He didn't get what he wanted, but he got what he deserved. If Malal could have been tricked, why didn't you, Stacy, and the Ka'Resh do it before an entire alien race was wiped out? I've run more than one long con in my day, kid. You wanna do that? You'd better be smarter than your mark. Malal was evil, the purest evil I've ever come across. No, I didn't think I could pull one over on what the average Joe might consider to be a malevolent space god that would eat my soul out of spite. So I acted in good faith, which is what you do when you've got a knife to your throat. Thankfully, the Ka'Resh were that confident and knew Malal better than I did. I'm glad the Ka'Resh left the galaxy after they took care of their straggler. Anyone with that much power can never be trusted. And you don't think you did anything wrong? Don't act like the Toth were innocent bystanders in all this. They betrayed the Alliance. They attacked Earth. They enslaved races and used them like cattle, as food. They were a hostile, evil species, and they were hell-bent on gaining control of our Procytech, until I poisoned that well for them. Removing the Toth from the galactic stage was a win-win for us. The Vishrakath, the whole galaxy. Then why was it kept secret? Why not proclaim what a hero you were for doing this?
Roland got off his cot, hands balled in anger. His visceral reaction to the story struggled with the analytical part of his mind that, in ways that terrified Roland, found reason in the Ibarra's actions.
Imagine there's a wolf terrorizing your village, Ibarra said. A smart wolf, an apex predator that no trap can catch. The wolf's threatening the children, snatching away sheep just before winter arrives. A hunter decides to end the threat, but the only way he can catch the wolf is to use a villager as bait. Even if the hunter uses an outcast, the village will always be a bit suspicious of the hunter after that.
So you kept what happened to the Toth hidden from Earth and the rest of the galaxy. There weren't many eyewitnesses. Those that saw what happened have been scattered to colony worlds. Many sent off with hail to Terra Nova, never to be seen or heard from, for a couple hundred years. Now Admiral Valdar may be a war hero, but when Valdar was captain of the Breitenfeld, he made a few errors in judgment that I leveraged to keep him quiet.
That the ship had a sudden and total system failure that erased some of her logs and video files was a coincidence. Ibarra winked at Roland.
Much easier to get along with everyone when they don't see you as the same genocidal enemy that was just defeated, continued Ibarra. Also easier to move on to a glorious future if you're not soul-searching over the path. Stacy and I chose to be humanity's sin-eaters.
She's not dealing with it very well, Roland said as his anger subsided.
No, now that's not what's eating away at her.
Ibarra leaned against the bars and motioned around him.
When I saved her, put her mind into one of these bodies, it was rushed.
She was moments away from dying. It's not like I had a chance to consider the long-term implications. And the transfer was imperfect. Her mind's stabilized in the past year, but she's not whole. The trauma of being shot, and that she can't go back to her old body, has been an issue for her. Among many, many other things. She had Procytec. Why not just grow herself a new body? Two reasons. Ibarra started pacing again. First, we cannot grow a body without building the mind within it at the same time. Transferring her consciousness into a brain with a mind of its own would kill the host. That's the best-case scenario. I'll let you marinate on everything else that could happen. And killing the host would be murder. That's beyond the two of you? Simple murder? There's killing, and then there's murder. You're a soldier. I think you can draw a line between the two. At first, Stacy wasn't willing to do a transfer, but the longer she's stuck in that body, the more she slips away. And the second reason? We need a Kharesh probe to do the transfer. They were the conduit from an ambassador's homeworld to Bastion. Want to see one? Ibarra went to his desk and opened the drawer. He pulled out a thin glass needle and held it up to catch the light. This is Jimmy. About a century ago, he dropped into the Arizona desert and made a phone call. It's been quite a trip since then. Ibarra laid the needle on his palm and pushed it from side to side. The Kharesh took his light away when they left. This is all I have to remember him by. That's what she was looking for on Oricon, wasn't it? Roland asked. A way to live again? No, son. Ibarra placed the inert probe back in the drawer and slid it shut. She's looking for something far more dangerous than the privilege to eat, feel, and grow old. She wants control. And for that, she needs power. If she finds the Kharesh Ark, then she can remake this whole galaxy in whatever way she wants. Ibarra sat on his bunk and leaned forward, elbows on his knees. And it's my fault, he said. I made her this way. I set her on a path before she was ever born. Never gave her the chance to be her own woman. Now she's free. Free and in control of her own nation, armies, fleet. Free to choose her own path, and she's chosen to never ever let anyone control her again, and it is all my fault. Then, how do we stop her?
Roland asked. Ibarra lowered his head and remained silent. Chapter 7 Ignar steadied himself against the railing of the Ardennes observation deck as the ship translated through the wormholes connecting crucible gates. He knew the science behind the event, knew that the travel was as instantaneous as science could detect, but every time he made a jump, he felt like his body was stretching. Gideon seemed no worse for wear, same with Shareel. The other officers and sailors on the deck spoke amongst themselves and pointed out the tall windows. The points of the crucible's gigantic thorns moved slowly, occluding the dense star field beyond the new bastion system. A spacecraft shaped like a silver corkscrew rotated slowly in the distance. Narusha! Ignar's metal hands opened and shut with a snap, earning a look from Gideon. Sorry, sir. Gets my blood up just seeing them. I'm used to see the alien, shoot the alien.
I didn't know you felt that way,
Shareel said. Not you. You're not an alien. You're Dotari. Which are alien, but not the ones we shoot. Are you just being difficult? Ignar asked. Shareel made small clicks with her beak.
This is neutral space, Gideon said. No active weapon systems allowed, which is why Admiral Leto didn't make this jump under combat conditions.
Must be driving him nuts. Ignar said. Where is New Bastion, anyway? Shario ran a finger down the smart glass and opened a menu. A window popped open, and lines traced from the corners to a large, pale dot halfway up the glass. A close-up of a desert world with extensive mountain ranges and small ice caps ringed by oceans appeared.
"Real garden spot," Ignar said. "Why'd they pick this place to have powwows?"
"It's located on the far side of the galaxy from the edge of the Zaros Advance, not close to any of the old Bastion worlds. The desert where they're building the Congress is in a dead zone. No risk of local microbes infecting anyone. The main reason they picked this place is that no one else wanted it,"
Gideon said.
"Radiation levels are higher than most species can tolerate over the long term. So they're building biomes for each member and calling them embassies."
Shareel double-tapped an icon on the planet and the holo zoomed in on an incomplete large dome, with several smaller spokes connected by covered highways. She panned the camera around, pausing over construction equipment. The covered stadium looked like a cloud with even layers.
"They've still got some work to do," Ignar said.
"Anything done by committee is inherently inefficient,"
Shareel said.
"And ugly. What architectural style are they going for?"
"It's modeled after the old Karesh station that was the original Bastion,"
Gideon said,
"which the Zaros destroyed at the end of the war."
Shareel zoomed out and sent the camera to a line of alien vessels in orbit around the planet. She stopped over an asteroid with massive engines protruding from one end, its irregular surface broken by weapon emplacements and lit bays.
"Davish Rakath are here," she said.
"Vish!"
Ignar held a prosthetic hand up in front of the glass, looking at the reflection. Seeing their ship and hearing the name of the insect-like alien seemed to make him more self-conscious about his appearance than usual.
"They called this session," Gideon said. "Seems we aren't the only ones that have had run-ins with the Kasat."
"The Kasat are the reason we're here?" Ignar asked. "Not the Ibaras?"
"I doubt we'll leave here without a long, painful discussion over the Ibaras," Gideon said. "It's an 18-hour burn to the planet. Get some rest. You're both coming down as my bodyguards. There have been some security incidents in the past few months."
"Will I get to see Vish?"
Ignar asked.
"Best behavior,"
Gideon said.
"Leave it to diplomacy to suck the fun out of anything," Ignar said. Ding, ding.
Ignar woke with a snort. He lifted the stump of an arm that ended just below his elbow and wiped sleep from his eyes. Then he rolled over in his bunk and squinted at the blinking time on his new data slate. He had 10 minutes to get to the cemetery and suit up, and he had incoming calls from Shareel and Enrique, his chief armor tech.
"Balls,"
he said as he sat up, swung his legs over the side of his bunk, and pushed the nub of his right leg into his boot. The cybernetics interface at the bottom of his calf clicked into the boot and he rolled the ankle of his prosthetic around.
"Balls, balls,"
he said as he connected his other foot, then leaned to one side where his hand and forearm waited in a holster. He snapped it on as he mentally kicked himself. He'd forgotten to set his alarm with the new data slate, and now he was about to make a mortal sin as an armor officer, missing time to cross the line of departure for a mission. He twisted his other arm on and bumped an elbow against the door control panel. On the other side of the sliding door hung two cylinders the width of a finger. Each was plastic, but carved with little totems of birds and Dotari language.
"Sure, why not?"
Ignar grabbed both totems and snapped them free of the string connecting them to his door frame.
"No, no, no!"
Shareel shouted from the end of the passageway. At the other end, the two aggressive Dotari pushed past the Marine Guard, both calling out in their native language. Ignar looked down at the two totem sticks, then to Shareel, then to the two males that didn't seem interested in each other, but were pointing at Ignar.
Little help here?"
Ignar yelled to Shareel. She ran up to Ignar, twisted him toward the oncoming Dotari, and ducked behind him. She then began singing in Dotari, a soothing rhythm that only confused Ignar more as it seemed to make the two males even angrier. The Dotari pilot snatched a totem away and broke it in half. The Dotari armor grabbed the other and bit down on it, breaking it into thirds and spitting out a chunk at the other's feet. The corridor was silent, but for the constant beeping from all their forearm screens. The pilot pointed at Ignar.
I am Manfred Vo, and I demand the Ushura choose once the mission allows. I do not yield.
I am Fortir, and I do not yield,
the armored Dotari said.
That's great, guys. Really, it is. But I... Ow!
Ignar winced as Shahriel pinched his back. She then shook him by his jumpsuit, and he continued.
Mission? Yes. After the mission, we all have some place to be, right?
Manfred brushed his forearms off with an exaggerated gesture, and Faltir mirrored him. The two turned and jogged away. Shahriel spun Ignar around.
Why? Why didn't you answer your phone?
She buried her face in her palms.
Walk and talk.
Ignar nudged her toward the elevator at the end of the passageway.
I don't know what the hell is going on, but it can't be as bad as missing our call time.
I didn't think they would offer dowries so quickly. Damn my pheromones,
Shahriel said as they stepped into the elevator.
They put their lineage totems in my door overnight. I didn't choose one, so they went to you, and then you went and touched them both.
I have no idea what's happening right now, Ignar said, tossing his hands up.
You... I... Now I have to join with one of them.
Shahriel rubbed the bridge of her nose.
And you get to pick.
Oh, no, Ignar said, shaking his head. You need to back that truck up. Tell them I'm just a clueless human that doesn't know the rules. True statement. And you're not getting married to anyone. Will that fix this? We'll tell them once we've got our armor on. No one argues with armor.
You don't understand.
Shahriel removed her hand, and small blue freckles appeared across the bridge of her nose and spread up her forehead.
This has to happen. I want this to happen.
No. No, you don't. You said this would pass, right? No one needs to get married. Let's stop all this crazy talk right now,
Ignar said.
The two of them will only get more aggressive, she said. Other males will catch my scent, and the threat of them killing each other over me will only get worse. You have no idea how many Dotari stories start like this. Because an Ushura refused to act, there were wars, cities destroyed. Humans wouldn't understand.
You think humans have never done something stupid because they were in love, or especially obsessed with the opposite sex? Let me tell you what happened in Fair Verona sometime, Ignar said. I don't have to choose. Just delay, he continued. We'll get the brass involved, and then you all can go back on Dotari Saltpeter and we'll have a nice laugh about this, Ignar said.
The elevator stopped and opened to the cemetery, where Gideon stood on the catwalk in front of two waiting suits of armor, their chests and wombs already open. The lieutenant, in his dress uniform and spit-shined, strapped boots, looked at the clock on his forearm screen and then glared at Ignar and Shahriel.
The first person my suitors will hurt is probably you, she said. That you're not even Dotari has raised my desirability in their eyes.
Ignar waved to Chief Enrique as he stomped a foot and pointed at Ignar's waiting armor.
Shahriel, you're explaining this to Gideon, not me.
Chapter 8. Roland, his body braced in a push-up position against the floor, lowered his upper body. He hissed out a 10 count, then kept his chest hovering just over the ground for another 10 count. He pushed up slowly, his arms quivering with fatigue, sweat dripping from his forehead. He locked out his arms and collapsed.
14,
he said. In the other cell, Mark Ibarra glanced up from his tablet and shook his head.
Why bother? Mark asked.
You armor types have no need for physical fitness. Back when I started the program, before the analog war, I recruited...
The privacy screen snapped on, and the vault door opened with a hiss of pneumatic locks. Roland grabbed the side of his bunk and struggled to his feet as the same two guards entered the cell block, an appearance off his normal mealtimes. The ever-scowling guard wrapped his truncheon against the bars, electricity snapping between the club and the metal. The man behind him carried a hood and muzzle.
"The prisoner will prepare for transport," the lead guard said.
He swiped a hand over the cell door and a panel fell open, large enough for Roland to stick both hands through and receive his restraints.
"Your queen want me again?"
Roland asked. The guard slammed his club against the bar and lightning flickered up and down the cell wall.
"Don't push it, kid," said the more genial guard. "You've been granted a small privilege. Keep the lip up and you can keep up your mushroom routine in your cell."
"What privilege? Maybe I'd prefer you come check out just how slippery it is in here," Roland said. "You're not in your armor," said the guard with the club, his hand tightened around the handle.
"Prisoner gets marked up. You'll explain it to the colonel," the other guard said.
He elbowed his fellow guard out of the way and wrapped the handcuffs against the open window.
"Exercise, kid. You're getting it one way or another."
Roland flexed his hands, feeling the blood flow through his arms. Any chance to leave the cell was an opportunity to devise an escape. He went to the door and let the guard cuff him. He accepted the muzzle and hood and let the friendlier guard lead him out of the cell.
"What's wrong?"
he heard the guard say. Roland seized up as the club struck his lower back and sent an excruciating bolt of pain from his knees to his shoulders. One of the guards caught him before he could fall, and he felt flesh press against his ear through the hood.
"Speak against Lady Bar again,"
the angry guard said, his breath stinking of spicy food.
"Please."
Muscles along Roland's back and legs twitched, threatening to cramp up. A half dozen retorts he'd been practicing stayed bottled up inside. The guards hauled Roland to his feet and dragged him away. The hood came off, and Roland found himself in a wide room with wooden beams running across the ceiling, and the walls were paper screens, held within a thin grid of wooden rods. Mats of woven fabric made up the floor. The guard removed his muzzle and the handcuffs and stepped back from his prisoner as Roland rubbed his aching back.
"Why the gag?"
Roland asked.
"There are worse things you can say than insulting the lady," the guard said.
He looked over Roland's shoulder and raised his chin slightly. Behind him a set of full-body training padding and two long swords in scabbard belts hung from a wooden rack in the middle of the room. A few yards away along the wall, before a small shrine to St. Colin, a man in training gear knelt in prayer, a sword gripped in one hand. He looked well-built and had plugs at the base of his skull. Another armor soldier.
"Alisque insidiantibus sit pavor, terrore formido,"
the other man said. Roland recognized the near end of a prayer for the blessing of a sword and drew one of the swords. It was dull, lightweight, but he could swing it with enough force to make it hurt. The penitent man kissed his pommel and stood. He was dark of eyes and hair, his skin faintly olive. A hint of crow's feet around the eyes and weariness to his countenance hinted at a life of war.
"I'll have your name,"
Roland said, testing the weight of his weapon. The armor soldier motioned to the pads. Roland watched the gesture and narrowed his eyes. The way the man moved, Roland recognized the body language. He moved like the Ibaran armor that ripped Ignar apart and laid Roland low on Oricon. This was Nicodemus. Rage, born of his humiliating defeat and days in a cell, rose in Roland's heart and took over. He charged forward and swung his sword at the other man's neck. Nicodemus raised his sword arm, the blade held flat against his forearm. Roland's strike careened off, sending a jarring shake up his arm. The Ibaran snapped out a kick that caught Roland on the thigh and caused a spasm in his quadriceps, strong enough that Roland's leg buckled. Nicodemus's sword struck Roland's wrist and sent his weapon flying. Roland tripped over his own feet and fell to the mats. History seemed to repeat itself as Nicodemus planted a boot on Roland's chest and raised his sword up, the tip pointed at Roland's heart. The Abaran slammed the sword down and buried the tip into the mat next to Roland's head.
"You have a hole in your swing," Nicodemus said. "I see Gideon's hand in your training. I know you have been trained better than this."
He ripped his sword from the mat and stepped back. Roland shook pain out of his throbbing wrist and propped himself up on an elbow.
"What do you want with me?"
Roland asked.
"I'm here to train you."
Nicodemus planted the tip of his sword between his feet and rested his hands on the pommel.
"Train me? Why?" "Your future hasn't been decided. Perhaps you'll be sent back to Earth. Then you'll fight again as armor. Put the pads on. It'll hurt less."
Roland rubbed a knot out of his leg and got up, wincing.
"I'm going home. You may, you may not. But while you are here, you will be trained.
If I go back to Earth, we may end up on the opposite side of a fight again. Why would you train me?"
Nicodemus tilted his head slightly to the side.
"You heard me pray. You've seen my armor."
He touched his left shoulder, where the Templar cross would be.
"You are a supplicant, aren't you?"
Roland paused, his thoughts going to the primer he read that morning.
"For the order is never complete,"
Roland quoted,
"and the hands that bear the sword must forge the next. That's why you're here. You think you have a duty to train me?" "There's no question if I have that duty," Nicodemus said.
"I don't believe... I know the vows, the oaths, but you training me..."
"The Templar are the sword and shield of all humanity. The Kassat are enemies to Earth and the Abaran Nation, as are the Vishrakarth, as are others. If you go back, you may fight them. I'll not return a dull instrument."
Roland considered his options and decided he had little to lose. He took the padded jacket off the rack and slipped it on.
"What happened to my lancemate, Twagnar?"
The jacket tightened around his body as he ran his fingers down the seam to seal it.
"We gave your squadron enough time to find him. They left the station long before we sank it into the gas giant, so Baeski and Gideon would never have left so soon unless they'd found him."
Nicodemus lifted his sword off the ground and gave it a twirl. Roland stepped into the pair of oversized pants and wiggled his foot into the loose mesh sock at the end. The bottom and top halves of the outfit attached around his waist, and Roland felt the suit adjust itself to his body. The training gear was modeled off the pseudo-muscle layers of combat power armor. While this outfit wouldn't augment his strength, it would dampen the force of any hit he took, and the control systems would insulate against the shock batons the guards carried.
"Don't pretend that you know them."
Roland put on a pair of gloves and slapped on a full-face helmet.
"They stayed loyal to Earth when you ran off with the Ibaris."
Nicodemus lunged forward with a fencer strike and stabbed Roland in the solar plexus. Roland's armor stiffened, spreading the force of the impact across his chest, but the blow still hit like a punch. Roland twisted to one side and pushed the blade tip away with his upper arm. He snapped an elbow at Nicodemus's bare face. The other fighter caught the elbow with his palm and dug fingers into the joint, and then spun and pulled Roland off balance. Roland tripped over Nicodemus's leg and fell to the ground with the grace of a dropped sack of potatoes, his sword bouncing against the mats. Nicodemus kicked Roland's sword back to him.
"You know nothing, Pledge. Get up, and I'll teach you to handle a blade with some skill,"
Nicodemus said. Roland collapsed onto his cell floor. Bruises and welts pulsed on his arms and shoulders, but the cold concrete floor was oddly soothing to his battered body. He ran his tongue against the inside of a swollen lip, tasting blood that oozed from a cut down the side of his nose.
"Dear God, they tortured you!"
Mark Ibarra shouted.
"Which was it? Tweedle Fat Ass or Tweedle No Neck?"
"No," Roland said as he scrubbed dried blood off his cheek and propped himself up.
"It was Nicodemus, and they deserved every hit he landed."
And they brainwashed you!
We were sword sparring. Roland worked his hands open and shut, feeling the pain of too many strikes against his training gear.
Even with pads, he's damn strong. I managed a number of insults that no amount of pain meds can cover up.
Did... what?
You look like you got a good kicking from a football team.
Just him. Roland turned to his bunk, where a covered tray sat next to his pillow. He lifted the lid, and steam from pork chops and peas mixed with carrots wafted out. He put the lid back on and became acutely aware of the ache in his jaw.
Ibarra, why do they keep putting a muzzle on me?
Because of me, the metal man said. I controlled the procedural creches on Earth, and when we first arrived here, you control the creches, you can edit the consciousness that goes into the body. Stacy must be afraid that I snuck in voice commands that you could activate with the choice phrase.
Did you?
What? I'm shocked. Shocked that you would even accuse me of such a thing.
Ibarra raised his chin.
So you did.
Roland went to the sink and washed his face.
Not just me, mind you. Stacy and I made a few adjustments to creches in the home system before we took our leave of Earth, only to those still in the tubes. The code erased itself after that batch. Something of an insurance policy. I was against it after the last debacle,
Ibarra said.
When did you play mind games with other people, or was that something you did since the first Procy walked out of the farms?
There was always one that... oh, she doesn't matter anymore. But she's half the reason we're in this mess. What were you doing while the Ruhold and the Narusha occupied the Crucible? You were a kid, probably sitting in a bunker wondering why the Zaros hadn't killed you yet. What you missed was a rather daring jailbreak led by yours truly while under great duress. We kicked the aliens off the jump gate and sent them home with their tails between their legs. But in the few days they had control, they modified the proceeds coming out of the tubes on the Crucible. One was a woman I've known for many years, a fixer, assassin, all around evil, yet eminently useful woman named Shannon.
The Narusha made their own proceeds?
Roland wiped a cloth across his face.
They injected some rather ingenious behavior protocols, which turned a few hundred Procees into sleeper agents. I was so confident in my system that I never thought anyone else could hack codes, and I was so very wrong. Shannon's the one that hurt Stacy so badly. After that, I found what the Narusha had done and decided to eliminate the rest of their assets.
The Hiawatha,
Roland said as he sat down and poked at his dinner, nibbling on a few peas at a time.
The ship they accused you of blowing up. All the evil Procees were aboard, weren't they?
Evil is a choice, Mr. Shaw. They were created to be weapons against humanity. I destroyed them to keep Earth safe. After what they did to Stacy, I wasn't willing to take risks with letting them stay active. Why not bring them in for treatment? Do something other than kill them. And how would that have played out if I got on the vids and said, "No need to panic! The following Procees, please report to your nearest security team. You may be subject to alien mind control at any time, purely routine." It would make everyone suspicious of every Procee in the system. All this was happening while a Zaros drone armada was advancing on the system, mind you.
So you murdered them all.
I didn't have time for a perfect solution. Not the first innocents to die because of me. Not the last.
And what happened to the software the aliens used? Did you erase that along with the people on the Hiawatha?
Roland dropped his fork onto the plate, his appetite gone.
Tools are tools. Do you think Stacy's using that tool to keep her people under total control? Did she work in a failsafe we could find? Use it to stop whatever she's planning?
Ibarra walked up to the bars between their cells and looked hard at Roland.
Son, if you could snap your fingers and kill every Procy in the Ibarra nation, would you?
His head turned from side to side slowly, waiting for an answer.
I don't know. They're not any different from the people in the Hiawatha, are they? Victims of circumstance?